Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. We are one of over two dozen lodges around the world dedicated to spread broadcasting the teachings of Theosophy as put forth by the two teachers at the end of the 19th century. We have a line of straight-line theosophical writings at the book table, which is open before and after meetings. Our meeting starts on Sunday, of course, at 11 and ends at 12. And Wednesday nights, we're studying the Bhagavad Gita, and we're finishing up last couple of classes. At the end of the month, we will conclude the 18 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, and we will begin a study in the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge, which is a synthesis of the secret doctrine as recorded by H.P. Blavatsky. Now, on Wednesday evenings, the doors open at 5:15, and we have a reference library that is open until 7:15. There's a librarian there if you need direction, and you can study for the evening's class or read any of the books on religion, philosophy, sciences that we have available there. So our classes on Wednesday evenings start at 7:30 and conclude at 8:30. So all of the contributions here are voluntary. We have the teachings, but we have no teachers. We have student volunteers who put forth the philosophy to the best of their knowledge. And all contributions of time, money, and service are free will. You can make a contribution at the book table, or there's a little box on the shelves on the right-hand side on your way out. Everything is needed, but there's nothing implied. It's not necessary. It's all free will. So no obligation is imposed or implied. Now, we would like to read the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists before we begin our part, which will be summarized. The first five paragraphs will be summarized in the part Instinct and Intuition, which is, depending on your book, and the in the book, The Friendly Philosopher, it begins on page 263. And there's also handouts as well. The policy, this is the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy, and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all those who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study or otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So at this time, we have a volunteer who is going to summarize the first five paragraphs of the part, Instinct and Intuition.
The article that we're sharing today is chock full of ideas, so the summary will probably go on a tad bit too long. Please forgive me. Instinct, intuition, and reason are defined early in the article. Instinct being an animalistic trait, if you will, direct perception, but direct perception of what is right within a particular realm or condition of perception. It's experiential, it's felt. Intuition, on the other hand, belongs more to the human, and it is the direct cognition, not perception, but cognition, of truth in all things. And the two can supplement each other, but it is reason that is the balance between instinct and intuition, and certainly we all know what the article says to be true. That reason is only as good as the premises upon which it's based. And therefore, we have to be very careful, cautious that reason is based on eternal, changeless premises. Now, theosophically speaking, the true foundation of instinct, intuition, reason is spirit. That spirit is the premise upon which every root of every grade, every form, every kind in manifestation is based. That's the root, spirit. That the production of all powers, instinct, intuition, reason, that production moves by evolution from spirit into form or manifestation along lines laid down of thoughts, of ideals, and certainly of actions. Theosophically, in the kingdoms, we still see that root, that spirit, in existence in each kingdom. Each is evolving according to its own degree or conditioning, and there's a spiritual something with a psychic nature, it is said, that is expressing itself in each of the kingdoms. So in the mineral kingdom, for instance, we see a latent kind of divine spark, but certainly in even the mineral kingdom, we see form and we see activities of attractions and repulsions. And it is said in the plant and the animal kingdoms, each adds a degree of psychical intelligence being expressed through form. The human is able to transcend the conditions in a way that the mineral, the animal, and the vegetable cannot. In the human kingdom, we have metacognition or self-consciousness, the ability to observe conditions, to experience and perceive conditions, but then to certainly make determinations based on reason, free will, and choice. Overall, through all manifestation, moving from spirit down into the densest of concrete expressions, so from, from beyond the nebular through the nebular to the current concrete forms. All of these conditions are produced with the assistance of the human kingdom. Even when this earth, this particular planet, began, it is said that the human was already self-conscious prior to the state of physicality. The human stands midway between spirit and matter and has both instinct and intuition, and by use of mind principles like reason, can determine the future of evolution for all kingdoms, for all manifestation. And we know what it is to live in, as spirit, live in the body, in the brain, through the body, but not be of that. We have a body that functions frequently. The cells are on automatic or reflexive conditioning, while we as thinkers continue on activity, not having to worry about breathing or digestion or whatever else. Instinct in the animals is acquired along their line of intelligence. Intuition in man is, it can be tapped or not, and it carries within it all the knowledge existing from all incarnations in the real man, not in the brain, not in the physicality, but rather in the perceiver, the true inner essence of spirit that is potential on this plane. By the choices and activity, by the premises held, by the living that we do, we can tap that intuition and gain sparks of insight, if you will. We can develop a deep sleep perception of what the intuition has in some for us. And certainly in waking hours, if we persist in right living, that degree of intuition called conscience, or the voice of the silence sometimes, that can become extremely active in the moment, unveiled and ready to be utilized as we impel the rest of manifestation.
So we impel not only ourselves, but all the lives which are in our bodies, which they are incorporated in ourselves, and we give them impulses. It's interesting how it talks about the mineral kingdom being psychic, but then, and that they make choices. It's not strictly a chemical reaction. It's not strictly mathematical. It's very much more mystical. And that each life form, and there are life forms below the mineral as well, which were not mentioned in the part, but all of nature, the mineral, and then the vegetable, the mineral has cohesive qualities. The vegetable kingdom has sensation. The animal has the mobility, and it also has a each one has a higher degree of consciousness. But that spirit and matter meet in the human being, and we are self-conscious and have been self-conscious since this earth, it's interesting how it says, since we began with this earth, because we had a huge role in developing this earth before we took these forms. So, yes.
Mr. Crosby here says that, we'll just say that instinct corresponds to feeling. And in that sense, what does intuition correspond to? And how is it that it seems perhaps sometimes some people are much more intuitive than
Okay, well, the first part, we think can be answered just by reading the first couple of sentences. Instinct is a direct perception of what is right within its own realm. So, implies here there's many realms. Whereas intuition is a direct cognition of the truth in all things. Reason, as it were, the balance between instinct and intuition. So, what was the second part again?
Well, the first part was he goes on a little bit further down there saying that instinct, animals feel.
Right.
Instinct. So that must be part of the emotions or talent. So, with regard to intuition, what principle within the human being?
Oh, okay. We are sevenfold. We have seven principles. We're sevenfold beings. Intuition would refer to that Buddhi principle, which is the highest that we can access. Spirit, pure spirit, is really it's completely metaphysical. We can't actually access it, but Buddhi is the storehouse of all knowledge, all experience that we've gained. In all bodies and in all planets, even before this earth and prior rounds. So that is what intuition is in its highest form. We have that. We cannot touch that at any one time, everything. We can only access part of it as we are still learning, we're still limited. Did you have a... It's a reservoir, it's a storehouse, is what we're, the intuition.
I think what is coming to mind is, gee, wow, we have such great potential. We are such really, it's unlimited in what we possibly can do. And here we are. And we've made a mess of everything. I guess that only proves that we are thus far powerful. Because we made a mess of the world. Because
right.
It's no longer one of cooperation. It's the competition. It's very divisive. So we've created that too. So I guess what would you say is the problem? Our ideas that we hold.
Ah, the ideas. Well, you nailed it right there. The problem is the ideas we hold. We would say absolutely. We forget when we come into embodied each lifetime, we have to a little bit of our past karma comes to us, and we need to learn. We need to learn. All of life is about learning. It's true. We've made a mess of things, but that's how we only learn from our mistakes. And obviously, we've made many mistakes. We fell in love with these forms, like Narcissus, looking at the reflection in the water. We've fallen in love with the forms, and we've forgotten our mission is to be here for one another, to help each other, to uplift all of nature, not only ourselves, but actually all of nature. In the back, where is it?
Change,
are human and we have that intuitive quality, we can make those choices to the best of our ability. And by having the choices, it's just such a complicated situation with intuition and making choices and will and all of that. But, you know, being self-conscious, we can make the correct choices. We can change our minds.
Well, it is complicated, but who made it so complicated? It's we. But we have a way out. We always have choices, and we can extricate ourselves from this mess. And, yes?
It isn't complicated at all. It is so simple that we find it complicated. We are spiritual mind beings, responsible for our thinking, our feeling, our choosing, our acting. And as was said, we have made a mess. But that's the only way most of us learn. We keep making mistakes until we say, what's wrong with me? And then we start making some changes, looking for better ideas. So it isn't complicated at all. It is just, what do we want? And right now, what we want is, I want to be successful. I want to be admired. I want to be rich. I want to be better than you. And that's what's leading us deeper and deeper into a hole, because we are spiritual beings. So we have the power to make all that happen, but then we have to live with the results.
Yes. Yes, go ahead.
Well, it sounds something like the military. The Pentagon in Washington, D.C.
Can everyone hear?
No.
Okay.
It sounds like the military. In other words, the troops generally don't act before consulting headquarters. There are some instances, especially where instinct is called for. However, self-control goes straight back to headquarters. Reason, instinct, and intuition. They are headquarters.
Well, reason, instinct, and intuition are the headquarters. Well, yes, that's where the, we would agree, definitely. This lady here?
Maybe you thought of the answer of the, I don't know, question of how to get in a mess and so on. It's right here in the first paragraph that men, real animals feel. We reason about both our instincts, for we have some, and our intuitions, and usually reason ourselves into false positions,
right,
on a false basis of thinking. So it's our gift of reason that...
Right, it's a two-edged...
That's partially responsible for the mess we put ourselves in.
It is. We reason ourselves into things, which... Another way to put it is we rationalize. And growing up, we thought, well, rationalize is rational. But in studying philosophy and in this philosophy, we realize that when we rationalize, we're just making an excuse that sounds good. That's all it is. It 90, maybe we can fool 99% of the people with this excuse. But who are we hurting? We're just hurting ourselves. We can also, of course, we can hurt others as well by rationalizations. But it's something we need to really stop and think about and act on. In the back.
Instinct, intuition, reason, these are powers, but these are not the spirit that is eternal, resident in the human being. These are tools or degrees of perception available to be used by the thinker. Yes?
Yes. we weren't sure we were done. Yeah, these are powers. Reason, instinct, and intuition are powers of the soul. It's not spirit itself, but it's the way spirit moves through matter. And everything needs a vehicle. Spirit needs a vehicle. We created these vehicles. We were conscious before we were conscious beings, before self-conscious beings, before this earth began. And so we created what, you know, matter, spirit and matter are really two sides of one coin. They're not, it's not like spirit is more spiritual than matter. It's all interblended, but we have to think in contrast, because everything is dual and in incarnation. So does that make any sense, or okay?
Well, if we're so evolved, why does it seem that the instinct in the animals in the lower kingdom seems to be much more keen and more highly developed than any human that I know?
So why is the instinct so much more highly developed in the animal than in the human? Well, they don't, for one reason, they don't have to be confused about, you know, how they look today or how other people perceive them. They're not self-conscious. They are fully conscious. And they have a group mentality, which they share in their species. And they've developed, you know, they've honed these over time too. They're also in evolution as well. But when we see the animals acting viciously, it says that there'll be a point where the lion can lay down with the lamb. That's the ideal. But we are the ones that are impelling nature through our thoughts and our actions, and we're affecting them. So, yes, they know how to hunt, but their viciousness is actually from the human kingdom. Yes, this gentleman. Yes. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
One of the reasons that the animals appear more advanced is they don't have a choice. And not having a choice makes all of their actions more efficient. For man, everything is a choice. The duality of our existence breeds choices. Is it this or is it that? So consequently, they don't deal with that. They don't have that. It is this. I'm hungry. I will eat. And that makes it a lot simpler.
So yes, it's in a way it's much more highly focused than we are. Yes. Now go ahead.
Sure. And I think we do have it. It's just that our modern way of living with all the things we've done has dulled it a lot. And you get so much stimuli just from being in the city. If you get away from all that by any number of means, you do start to become more sensitive. Maybe not to the same degree, but that takes longer.
That's an interesting point. We are bombarded with messages, sensations. Each and every human being is sending out signals, and perhaps, you know, we get them quicker in a city than we would in the country. Yes, in the back.
In a daily way, each human being actually moves between perception and cognition. And so if we're mindful, if we make an effort to become aware of this, when we first wake up in the morning, there is a direct perception. There's an awareness of existence that doesn't have any logical, reasonable explanation. It just is, that sense of I am, that very early awakening.
Mm.
And then gradually cognition kicks in, and that monkey mind of awareness of thinking of what I'm supposed to do this day or who I am, and you know, all that busyness comes in. But we do have that experience available to us daily. And others who mindfully move through a meditative practice of life may be far more aware of that perception versus cognition.
So there's perception versus cognition, and the animals are perceiving and they're acting, and they're acting within certain parameters. But we have the ability, by being self-reflective beings, we have the ability to step back and think before we act. Although some people, especially in certain situations, they react without thinking, and much to their detriment and others. In the back?
We've heard a lot of times where people have been lost in the mountains, in the woods, out in the desert and whatnot, and you know, they're found, and of course they're dehydrated, they're sick and whatnot, but they're alive. They were able to survive. And they interview the people and they say, I don't know, something just kicked in and I was just running on automatic. And we think when you're in that kind of a situation, your instinct for survival kicks in. And as was said, you don't have all the other distractions to interfere with that. I mean, survival mode just kicks in, and the instincts just kind of, you know, help to save the person.
Yeah, well, there's something called tanha, which means thirst for life, and some people have it much more than others. So we really don't know if that thirst for life also, it probably is a factor working along with instinct in these extreme survival cases. Yes, go ahead.
You know, our instinct, we're aware of. Our intuition, not so much. But we do have intuition where we think we know what's right. And if we don't act on it, we'll never verify it. So if we don't use our intuition, it won't get any stronger. It'll lay down. You have to check, test, and verify those feelings and those perceptions that rise up within us. That, you know, you have to figure out what's true and what's not true.
Well, that's interesting, and that just brought a question to mind, that true instinct is more or less, well, it's something that we just know, and it's different from instinct. But when we think we know and we're testing things out, which we're told to test, check, and verify, all of the teachings, don't just assume that this is the truth. Check it out, try it out for yourselves. So we're wondering if. Is when we think we know, when we're testing something out, and is that really intuition?
No, we're not talking about the mental process. There's a deeper process if your intuition says, well, no, I shouldn't do this, or I shouldn't say that, and it's like, for many reasons, you'll offend someone, you'll make someone upset. There's all kinds of reasons that our intuition, that deep feeling of compassion that we have within us, our intuition is that intelligence of that compassion. And if we don't use it, it won't get stronger.
Yeah, well, it needs to be exercised. Like anything else, we need to do, physical exercise is good for the body, and mental and spiritual exercises are good for our intellect and our soul.
There is a custom in places of the world to have tea at certain times during the day. So we could make our own tea time an exercise of perception and cognition. Stop every couple of hours and ask, who am I? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? What do I want to know? What do I need to learn? So that we're always trying to be in touch with what life is trying to teach us at that moment. Because we're told life is a school, and we created the curriculum. We're here because of the mistakes we've made, and we need to learn from them in order to grow wiser and more helpful.
So during the day, if we make a habit of at set times during the day, because it's something that's ideally, it's something we would be doing constantly and unremittingly, but to start, if we can set aside some specific time or times during the day to reset the clock and look at, you know, take an inventory, a quick inventory, of our actions and our reactions and our feelings, our interactions with others, we can learn quite a lot. Life is a school. And, yes, in the back.
We don't have to look very far afield to find religious philosophies that have built certain rituals into the day.
Right.
The Angelus might ring at certain periods.
Mm-hmm.
For Christians, call to prayer. The Muslims use the voice from the call from the bell tower to get folks to pray and meditate. So we've got these traditions all around us. And there must be, historically, if we go back far enough, there's probably evidence of it in prehistoric times as well.
So we have these traditions, these religious traditions. These religious traditions came from somewhere. We may not be able to trace the historical, some of the threads are lost. We can't trace everything back. Although within us, we do have all knowledge. So there could come a time when we can do that. So it's just a good habit to set up reflection, to be self-reflective beings. It's a good habit to set aside time. Go ahead.
The idea of the aim and purpose, evolution, and it came to mind that if Adam had consulted on a higher plane, he would have rejected that group and remembered their total purpose.
But
so here we're getting some idea. Those fundamental ideas seem to be the basis.
But the book of Genesis, like any other book in the Bible, there's many levels of meaning, and there's popular traditional meanings that are completely wrong, because we needed to partake of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. Otherwise, what would we be? We'd be amoebas. We'd still be there. We never would have advanced. But in popular parlance, often we say, oh, the snake tempted Eve, and Eve was the weak one, and then Adam was dumb for listening to Eve. But we think of, we love this bumper sticker we saw once, Eve was framed. And we think it's true. It's true in general. It's true with that women are, unjustly blamed for so much. and have been historically, you know, at least in the last couple thousand years. But we do need to partake of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. We do need to leave the garden. We're warned in the philosophy that about those that they eat honey and nuts, and they meditate in a cave, and they're living this blissful meditative existence high in the mountaintop, but they're not like the Buddha. The Buddha went through that phase, but he came back and he realized he needs to teach. You need to connect. You need to be around your fellow human beings because you're enriched by them and they're enriched by you. Yes. Right. We've all been male and female, and perhaps the females are suffering because of the way they were acting when they were males. So it's a vicious cycle, really. It's just we're all connected. We're all one. Go ahead.
You know, we often say in jest, well, you know, we see things happening, and we sort of can we justify it, but we really can't justify anything that we really don't know, and we don't know. We have no idea of even of our own purpose, our own dharma, our own duty. You know, we search for it, and we always, as the Gita says, that's our yoga. That is what we're to do. That which is before us.
What are we supposed to do? What's that?
Yoga.
What's yoga? Yoga is union, right? Union with what?
The spirit.
The spirit. Okay, the self of all. Yes.
If we have unlimited number of lifetimes for reincarnation, then what's the rush, I guess? What's the concern with right action if we learn from our mistakes anyway?
Okay. That's a good question. If we're going to live all these lifetimes and we're going to learn eventually anyway, but, well, maybe not, because we can get to a point where we're lives lived in selfishness will eventually lead to a point of annihilation where the others will go on and you'll be left back. You'll have to, in a sense, start over again. So it's not, it does affect us, it affects everyone. And the reason we are the way we are, it says somewhere, we don't know where it is, but we had a student who used to say, we're a million years behind, and we could very well be in our evolution because of selfishness and because of procrastination and because we think, well, I'll learn it anyway. And it's almost like in school, like, well, if I cheat on a test, if I still get the grade, what else matters? That's all that matters, isn't it? Because it's all nonsense. But we get in, it's not. We're only cheating ourselves. Yes, go ahead. Can you speak, please speak up? The Pietà.
And we, as the recipe is in this
But we're not animals. We are not animals. We're only using the forms. Right. And there was a hand in the back.
The thought occurred about the, you know, what's the rush issue? If as thinkers we take the position of living in the body, living in the brain, but not being that brain or body, then gradually our thought processes are no longer in a rush. There's no anxiety, there's no anticipation, there's no fretting about the future, there's no, you know, grieving over the past, but rather there is a very peaceful calm of existing in the moment and doing the best we can for all.
That's very well put. That's
unrushed.
Exactly. That's the flip side of procrastination. Procrastination is putting off the duties that we know we should do, but we don't want to do because we find them unpleasant. But mindfulness and realizing that we are eternal beings, but not being rushed, not being hurried, not being distracted, because our psychic nature, we're very emotional. We have these emotions which often get in our way. So instead of the emotions using us, we can use the emotions in a proper, calm, rational, focused way, rather than just being blindsided. Yes, in the back there.
So when you talk about using the emotions, so is there a way to use the instincts along with intuition? Like if you have a reaction or an instinct and your intuition, trying to keep bring that to it, to maybe, I guess, to be mindful of that instinct and so you can then assess and respond to the situation better, or even use the instinct as a a piece of something to figure out what's going on within yourself or the greater situation around you. Is that, that's making sense?
Sure. Well, we have instincts and we have emotions and we have intuition, we have reason. And if we are, you know, if we are too emotional, then we're getting bogged down all the time, and we're not helping ourselves, and we're not helping anyone else, except for maybe, you know, counselors or you know, professionals that, which we're not against that. Certainly go that route if need be, we use instinct and intuition together. We think. Does anyone? Anyone?
Can I add on something?
Yeah, sure.
Because when you mentioned the counseling, for people who are professional, like mental health professions, they some of them depend a lot on the idea of countertransference. So when they have an instinct to a patient, they can use their intuition to use that instinct to their benefit. So I guess that's where my question was coming from, more from that angle. So that maybe clears up what I was asking or what I was thinking along the lines of. So.
Okay, that's good. Professionals are trained in that, and good ones have, you know, they have a feeling. They have that intuition already built in. Yes? Well, that's what we've been talking about pretty much. It's that Buddhi nature. It's that storehouse of all our experiences, all our lives, but also it's really of all knowledge. It's there. And in the deep sleep state, we are renewed and we are one again. We're one with everything, which is, it really, we are one with everything, but in when we're awake, we're not so much aware of that. And we don't act on that basis. Most of us don't anyway. Yes, go ahead.
So in a practical way, okay, so I'm a new student of theosophy and I'm coming across this challenging situation where I have all these options and I'm really trying to use my intuition to discern what's really the right thing to do. Because I know there are times where I do it this way and I think it's my intuition, but really it might just be what I want to do.
Okay.
And there are other times when actually the intuition proved right. So, what color is the intuition, or how big is the intuition versus the instinct? How do you know which one is the poor?
We only learn by our mistakes, and we just need to jump. We need to jump in there, and if we're honest with ourselves, we do have a conscience, and if it's a moral issue, if it's just like, I really want to eat that candy bar, I know I shouldn't eat that candy bar. Go ahead.
Yeah. In years, one thing that we've found to be helpful, when it's not some kind of crisis management, have to make the decision right now. Put it out there when we've put it out there and we meditate from time to time over the course of a couple of days. We find it very interesting because there's a tendency for the thing that really is more important just becomes so glaringly obvious, and the thing that's not so much, really, it just withers on the vine, and it's almost like, what ridiculous, how could I confuse the two? It's just, if we are in the habit of meditating.
So we should develop the habit of meditation. Yes.
We think the best advice we ever heard on this particular question came from a student in this room, and what he said was, start by trusting your intuition. Write it down. I think I should do this. Do it. Then discover the reaction. If it was a negative reaction, try to figure out what part of you was interfering. In other words, you colored the intuition, as was just said, with something you wanted or needed. So you begin by trusting it, then you investigate the reactions, and then you begin to realize you can trust it. It's you have to work on, not intuition.
Uh-huh. Yes.
It was a couple of written text today, but what part does intuition play in genius? It would seem as though it would be one of the bases for genius.
Intuition would be a highly developed area of intuition, we think, and where it's easily accessible, maybe not easily accessible, but it's accessible. It may take work, but it comes to fruition. It's said that genius is 99% perspiration and 1% inspiration. And we all do have genius. We've all been geniuses if we're, at some point. And it's interesting with geniuses, the rest of their lives can be a complete disaster, but they have that one thing that they can do better than anybody else. So is that really balanced or is it imbalanced? That's a question too. I mean, there are balanced geniuses and imbalanced geniuses, of course. Yes, you had your hand up, did you? Or no? Okay. Yeah, you. No.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
We've also heard that if when we act, if we do write it down, I'm thinking about doing this versus that. When we reflect on what we've done, we've heard also in this room that if it was our intuition that we followed, when we reflect on it, we will always be able to see the logic in it. Even though in the moment, we couldn't really logically figure out logically what
Right, and in the heat of in the heat of an argument, in the heat of battle, in the heat of some kind of catastrophe, man-made or otherwise, that's when our intuition and our instinct kicks in, and then we can reflect afterwards. But in that moment, in the heat of the moment, everything comes to a head, and hopefully our intuition is firing on all eight cylinders. Yes, go ahead. Which statue was that?
Statue of
Lincoln. Oh, okay.
And the inscription, it's in the all of your and she's holding up a torch in her hand. So, for many of us, it's an understanding that Mother Nature will help us to pay attention to her.
Yeah. There is much deep symbolism in the excuse me in the Statue of Liberty, and that's an interesting study to do on your own time, especially since we're running out of time here. But we do need to help Mother Nature, and we do learn by analogy and correspondence. That's the way all philosophy is, really. It's analogy, correspondence, and self-reflection. And so we have come that one quick one.
Oh, yes, yes. My favorite expression is children of light, as you go forth into the world, seek to do gentle service to all that lives.
Could you repeat that and even louder? Please.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Children of light, as ye go forth into the world, seek to do gentle service to all that lives. And that's in one of the children's books that we have in Theosophy that you teach to a child.
Well, maybe some of us adults have forgotten that lesson, so I'm glad that you reiterated it. So let us go forth and do gentle service to one another. Thank you.